Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Heart disease or cardiovascular disease describe a range of conditions that affect the heart and include blood vessel diseases such as coronary artery disease, heart rhythm problems, and heart defects acquired at birth, among other things. The World Health Organization says an estimated 31% of all deaths worldwide are due to cardiovascular disease. That's 17.5 million people each year. How about that? And 75% of the deaths occur in low-income and middle-income countries. There are various types of cardiovascular disease. Medical experts say many forms of heart disease can be prevented or treated with healthy lifestyle choices, and the role of diet is crucial in the development and prevention of cardiovascular disease. But if this is the case, then why do so many people die of heart disease each year globally? We will discuss this, heart disease and diet. And joining us in the studio is our guest expert, David Foreman, pharmacist and author of Four Pillars of Health, Heart Disease. David Foreman, welcome to the show.
Oh, what an honor to be here. I'm excited. One of my favorite topics to discuss too. So thank
and
you for having
very
me.
Very critical topic. So we are excited to have you as well. Thank you so much for joining us. And we will have our discussion with David Foreman in a second. But first, we have this report on heart disease by ArtChimed. It looks at heart disease and dietary fat. Take a listen.
Previous studies found that people who ate a lot of saturated fats were more likely to have lots of the kinds of cholesterol that can clog arteries and lead to heart attacks. But there was little direct evidence to show that cutting saturated fats actually lowered the risk of heart disease.
And we wanted to look at whether replacing saturated fat with polyunsaturated fat with a healthy fat rather than, for example, let's say with carbohydrate or protein or other things, was beneficial.
Dr. Dariush Mozafarian of the Harvard School of Public Health thought the answer might lie in the numerous studies over the years that looked at diet and heart disease.
And so we wanted to do a systematic review of all the literature, find all of the appropriate studies and pool them to see if together there's a benefit for replacing saturated fat, specifically with polyunsaturated fat.
So Mozafarian and his colleagues study the studies, eight of them, in which some participants ate less saturated fat and more polyunsaturated fat, the kind of fats that are in fish, nuts, and vegetable oils. They were compared with a control group that had more saturated fat in their diets. This kind of research is called a meta-analysis. Often, combining the results of several similar studies can produce conclusions that the individual studies don't support. Sometimes that's partly because combining studies increases the number of people participating in the research. In this case, the combined studies included more than 13,000 people. Reducing saturated fats may reduce cholesterol, but low-fat diets alone don't seem to do much to actually reduce clogged arteries and heart attacks.
There's actually, in the last several years, been convincing evidence that replacing saturated fat in one's diet with carbohydrate has very little effect on heart disease. And so if that's not going to produce benefit, what sorts of replacements might?
Mozafarian's study found that people who replaced saturated fat with polyunsaturated fat had about a 20% lower risk of heart attack or other heart disease. It's still not exactly clear how the polyunsaturated fats confer this benefit, but the researcher says their effect on cholesterol may be part of the answer.
So, for example, dietary fats also actually, in many cases, improve HDL cholesterol, the good cholesterol, compared to carbohydrate, and they actually lower triglycerides, type of blood lipid that's associated with harm.
But Mozafarian says dietary fats may also affect blood pressure and inflammation of the blood vessels. They may even have an impact on the heart's electrical function. Whatever the mechanism, the study does suggest some guidance for people who want to lower the risk of heart disease.
They can't just look at a product that says low grams of saturated fat or low saturated fat and assume that it's healthy. If you're taking out the saturated fat, what are you replacing it with?
And it doesn't mean we have to spend a lot of time parsing the nutritional labeling that is now on packaged foods in many countries.
If someone says, I should eat fruits, vegetables, whole grains, fish, nuts, and avoid processed foods, you know, sugary beverages and foods with trans fat or high in salt, you know, that's actually much simpler, I think, than chasing all of these numbers.
Professor Dariush Mozafarian of Harvard School of Public Health, his study was published this week in the journal PLOS Medicine. Art Chimes, VOA News, Washington.
And David Foreman, again, thank you so much for joining us. What an interesting report. I mean, so many facts that are eye-opening. One of the things that Archimes said is reported on, he said, cutting saturated fat alone has little effect on lowering heart disease. I think that was one of the focus of the study. What is your take? What is your reaction on this study?
All right. So I've been studying this type of thing for a long time. And actually, there's great statistics here in the United States showing that in the late 70s, when the new guidelines came out directing people to go low fat or no fat, that we have a huge increase in obesity, an increase in
That's
heart
a paradox,
disease,
though.
An increase in diabetes. And here's why.
Why?
When we go to low-fat diet, and the gentleman who just did that interview said that people went to carbohydrates. And so they went to things like pretzels and pasta and bread, which contain little to no saturated fats. Mm-hmm. The body converts sugar and or anything that's converted to sugar easily, meaning carbs, starches,
yeah.
Not the carbs and veggies, but or nuts and seeds, but starches
Starch.
Or sugar are what really make people fat. You turn yourself, your body into a fat factory, whereas the body uses the good fats for other beneficial things in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, like what he was saying, honestly, wasn't a surprise to me as a pharmacist and a guy that's really into biochemistry and physiology. I could have told you why. Like, I mean, it's one of those things. We migrated to the foods that were actually very unhealthy for us,
yes.
that caused all these other... Your body doesn't use fat or cholesterol in your diet to make cholesterol. 80% of your cholesterol is made by your liver. It's not from your diet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made from sugar.
Mm,
if we're gonna,
really?
Yeah, and so starches convert pasta, bread, bagels, white rice, potatoes. They convert easily in the body from that complex, or not complex, but carbohydrate,
yes.
into a simplified carbohydrate, which is sugar, and then your body absorbs it. So that's why. Sorry, I got kind of long-winded on that, I think people are so deceived by this low-fat, no-fat,
mm-hmm.
and there's awesome statistics where you can just lay things over. It's like the glove that fits the hand perfectly when you look at, like, when we went to low-fat, how the incidence of diabetes and the incidence of obesity just started to skyrocket.
It's really incredible. It sounds to me like a paradox, but your explanation makes so much sense. So, I mean, when people go low fat, does the body kind of starve hunger for maybe carbs or starch? Is it because the body is asking for it, or it's people's choices?
No, it's both. But it's really what you said. The body the body uses fat, protein, and carbohydrate for many different functions, one of which is energy.
Yeah.
And so the two sources that burn the quickest, the fastest is sugar, the carbohydrate. That burns up quickly. Fat and protein are longer. They take a little longer to digest. And so it's a longer source of energy. So you're basically balancing out. So when we migrated, when we took fat out of the diet, the body needed more energy from somewhere.
Yeah.
And so it's going to, and the easiest and probably best tasting are those carbs, starchy,
yeah.
sugary foods. And so
yeah.
it actually does make sense. And those foods are actually nutrient deficient, meaning they're most of the breads and pasta and rice don't have a lot of other nutritional components to it, whereas the foods that are naturally high in fats, like nuts and mm-hmm. seeds, meat, chicken, fish, pork, pick any of those, they have other nutritional compounds in them that the body uses. So I feel like one of the reasons people eat a lot more of potatoes or rice or bread is because their body truly is nutritionally starved. It's looking not only just for the energy source, but the other vitamins, minerals, and components that are in that the body needs to run as well.
Wow, that's interesting. So then when we look at the big picture with regards to heart disease, and we understand that diet is such an important part of maintaining a healthy heart and keeping cardiovascular diseases at bay, why is it that there seems to be this trend of an increase? At least it doesn't seem to be decreasing when it comes to cardiovascular disease, not only in America, but globally, really.
Yeah, so it is a global issue, and it's interesting because heart disease here in the U.S. is the same as anywhere else pretty much in the world. The numbers are almost identical if you went country by country,
yes,
or region by region. They're all the same.
Okay.
And the reason is that the foods, granted we have the knowledge,
mm-hmm,
let's take oatmeal. It's a heart healthy thing to have, but most people don't want to wait 20 minutes to cook the steel cut oatmeal, so they buy the instant oatmeal. Instant oatmeal is not nearly as healthy as the old fashioned stuff that took 20 minutes to cook,
yeah,
or they can't afford it. There's a demographic that just can't afford to eat healthy. So, if you wanted to eat salmon for heart health, yeah, it's heart healthy, but it's more expensive than buying a decent steak nowadays. So, so part of it is that people are maybe eating the quicker forms of those foods,
yeah,
or the more processed forms of those foods, or they can't afford to eat those foods.
That's why we see a lot of times in populations where there is economically challenged, there is a very high rate of high blood pressure and diabetes. Is it accurate?
Right. And actually, I think you kind of mentioned that in a little bit of your intro here,
mm-hmm,
that the more impoverished an area was, the higher incidence of blood pressure and heart disease was. And I think it goes to that. And part of that has to do with, what the education the person is able to even receive in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then financially, it's really hard for someone that's, trying to decide, between, buying water or getting water,
yes,
or milk, or buying a salmon fillet. To me, it's the survival, thing, and actually having a full belly.
Okay.
And those things really, sometimes just having a full belly isn't enough.
Okay, great. Well, we have more to discuss with David Foreman. And when we return, we have to take a short break for the news. And when we come back, we'll have more information for you. So stick around. We'll be right back. It's now time for the news with Sarah Allen.
Doctors in South Africa say a 9-year-old infected with HIV at birth has not needed treatment as most HIV-infected people. Antiretroviral drugs help suppress HIV in infected individuals, but must be taken regularly to prevent viral rebound or further progression. This was not the case for the South African child whose viral load went from high to undetectable after 40 weeks of antiretroviral treatment during infancy. The child had been part of the 2007 clinic trial that randomly assigned babies born with HIV to receive antiretroviral treatment either immediately or once they showed symptoms. Experts say understanding how the child is protected could lead to new drugs or a vaccine for stopping HIV. Scientists say the next revolution in HIV could see daily drugs replaced with injections that slowly and continuously release HIV and medication into the blood. Early trial data from 309 patients showed jabs every once or 2 months worked as well as daily pills, which is how antiretroviral medication is currently taken. But observers say the medication is a burden. Someone diagnosed age 20 could end up taking more than 20,000 HIV tablets in a lifetime. And some people struggle, leading to HIV coming back and the virus resisting the effects of the treatment. The trial was conducted at 50 centers in the US, Canada, Germany, France, and Spain. The results, published in the Lancet Medical Journal, showed that by the end of the study, 84% of patients on daily doses were still suppressing the virus, 87% with injections every 4 weeks, and 94% with injections every 8 weeks. And finally, in more HIV news, the US government reported on Monday that the HIV epidemic is coming under control in Swaziland, the country in the world with the highest prevalence of the virus. The US President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief said that new infections among adults in Swaziland have dropped by nearly half since 2011. It said the latest research also shows that life-saving antiretroviral treatment has doubled in the country during the same period and now reaches over 80% of infected adults. Monday's report also says the southern African nations of Malawi, Zambia, and Zimbabwe demonstrate significant progress towards controlling the HIV epidemics. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Thank you, Sarah. That was Sarah Lynn with the news. Welcome back for those of you joining us late. Tonight, we're discussing diet and heart disease. And our expert guest here is David Foreman. He's a pharmacist and author of Four Pillars of Health, Heart Disease. And you are also called the herbal pharmacist.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm the only one.
The only one. All right. So listen, I wanted to touch on your book because I took a look at it and it's just there are such amazing information in there, and I really, really look forward to getting into reading everything. Now, one of the things that I saw is when you talk about cardiovascular disease, and it's true for all the conditions, really, you said we have to get to the root of the problem.
Right.
We have to get to the root of the problem. And one of these aspects is risk factors. All right.
I love you right now.
So let's talk about the risk factors when it comes to cardiovascular diseases.
How many guests say that to you, first of all?
I know, right?
No, honestly. Because here's the thing. Like, I literally have goosebumps right now because when it comes to heart disease or it comes to health in general, I'm so passionate about helping people get to the solutions they're looking for, you know, that vitality they're always looking for. And with regards to heart disease or any disease, you really need to know what causes it.
Yes.
Why do you get it? And that's actually, of all the people that have reviewed my book, the risk factor part of my book was the most popular part of my book. And it's because people, you know, if you have a family history of heart disease or you have some form of it right now, in order to get rid of it or prevent it, you need to know what causes it. And
yes.
So and in my book, I break it down into what I call controllable and uncontrollable risk factors.
Mm-hmm.
Uncontrollable for me would be I'm a guy, strike one. I'm in my 50s, strike two.
Okay.
I have a family history of heart disease, strike three. In heart disease, it's not three strikes and you're out.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't control those. I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm not going to focus on it. What I am going to focus on, because, yeah, I do have a family history of heart disease, are what are the things that cause it that I can control?
Yes.
Smoking, mm-hmm. being overweight, being inactive, having a bad diet, stress levels. Those are the things that I control. And I know people right now, you're listening and going, oh, come on, man, really? Control my stress? Yeah, seriously, control my stress.
How do you do that?
Well, there's different ways. And it's in the book. So.
But
we can get into that if you want to. But I think it really is critical for people to understand that you need to know why you have what you have. Dig to the true root. You know, you can go around all day spraying the top of a weed and it's not going to kill it. It's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the approach, I think, in a lot of times in modern medicine. We talked much earlier today, and I said that it might have been somebody else here, but anyway, when I was in my 30s, I had high blood pressure.
Yes, you told me.
Yeah,
yes.
I told you that. And so, you know, for me, I was stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
I was physically fit. I ate right. I did all the right things, and my blood pressure was off the charts. And, you know, a doctor could give me blood pressure medicine to lower my blood pressure, but unless I learned to manage my stress, I would be on that drug for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And so I chose to figure out what I could do to manage my stress. And if I'm overweight, lose weight. You know,
mm-hmm.
if I'm smoking, stop smoking. You know, there's certain things you can control.
Exercise.
But I can't control. I'm a 53-year-old guy with a family history. I can't control any of those.
Yes. Now, you are a pharmacist, and maybe you. I shouldn't ask you this, but you are also the herbal pharmacist. So perhaps you're the right person. It seems like doctors prescribe pills very quickly. You know, you talk about the fact that addressing diet, reducing stress and things like that can be helpful. But why is there a sense that we get the prescription very quickly as opposed to these tips?
Well, in all honesty, I'm not anti-medicine, even though I'm a natural medicine expert now. And I feel like they should go hand in hand.
Okay.
If we'll stick with cardiovascular disease. Say I go in and I have high blood pressure. You know, is there anything I have in natural medicine that's going to lower my blood pressure right now, which is important because high blood pressure is called the silent killer because you don't usually have symptoms and feel it. So what a physician should do is prescribe me something to lower my blood pressure
mm-hmm.
and dig into the root of why I have it and work on that. Because I can tell you, I didn't get rid of my stress overnight. I didn't go, oh, yeah, I'm stressed out and that's it. And all of a sudden I'm better the next day. You know, people with cholesterol, same thing. You know, it's not like I can lower my cholesterol or fix my cholesterol situation overnight. It's a process that you have to go through. Okay. So really, you need to integrate both worlds, the natural world of, for me, teaching, you know, teach somebody how to eat right, teach people how to get exercise. Maybe you have a bad knee. All right, well, maybe go swimming or ride a bike or... But that's the truly integrative approach. And doctors really don't have much time with you. So they take a snapshot, see your results and say, all right, David, you need a statin to lower your cholesterol. You need this to, and it's not necessarily their fault. Modern medicine is the way it is because we created it.
Yes. Okay. Now let's talk about, there is this hot, healthy food in the United States that is really trending, if I can use that word. Mm-hmm. People go for hot, healthy food. What is hot, healthy food, and what do you make of it?
Well, regretfully, a lot of the hot, healthy foods that we see in the stores here in the United States are labeled so. Like if you walk down the cereal aisle, you'll see little pictures of hearts.
Yes.
You know, and people are assuming heart healthy. I talked about oatmeal and, you know, people think oatmeal is great for lowering cholesterol. Well, the steel cut's the one that's really probably better for your cholesterol. Most people buy instant, but they both have heart healthy on them because science showed years ago that there's a component found in oats called beta-glucan. So it's oat beta-glucan okay. that lowers cholesterol. Mm-hmm. But, you know... Most of us aren't eating those foods. That's the problem. Yes. Or we're not eating the right form of them. And we need to understand that if we're really looking for the heart-healthy benefits in those foods, we probably have to consume them on a regular basis in the right form. Mm-hmm. Or in my case, I like to throw that out. And I say, you know what? Go ahead and try to eat healthy. But at the same time, take the supplements, the vitamins, minerals, herbs mm-hmm. that are beneficial for that condition.
Okay.
And that's why they call it natural medicine. Not that they're going to act like medicines, but they are a little more potent than what you can get out of the food.
So salmon, for example, is known to have good fat, omega-3 fatty acid.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the things you said also is that as opposed to salmon, or maybe in addition to salmon, to take the supplement. So why is salmon not the food of choice, or maybe it's not everything that it's said to be?
There's several answers to that question. One is wild-caught salmon would probably be the best, but it's not a sustainable food source. We don't even have enough wild salmon left to feed the animals that live on wild salmon. So wild-caught, it is a good choice, but it's not a good choice because of the sustainability issue. Okay. Farm-raised, I still have a question. Is everything in farm-raised the same that the salmon that are raised wild? No. I mean, you could read on the packaging that they're artificially colored
enhanced. I know.
Yeah,
I eat
right.
salmon a lot, and I can tell the difference they have. It's incredible.
The other thing that may be not real reasonable with salmon is you need to eat it 2 to 3 times a week. And for a lot of people, they don't want to eat the same food, especially something like salmon 3 times a week. And then... Probably the great majority of people listening right now are like, man, I don't even like salmon. I can't stand the smell of it. I don't like the taste of it. And so it's for all those reasons, really, that I'm recommending that people supplement. I personally, a little over a year ago, learned about krill oil. It's been out for years. Krill is spelled K-R-I-L-L, if you're wondering.
Okay, krill. Okay.
It's an omega-3 fatty acid that just similar to what would be found in fish oil.
Okay.
The reason I like krill better, if anybody's listening right now that's ever taken fish oil, they're usually large capsules, usually burp it up. and because it's difficult to digest. Krill oil, really small capsules. It's so easy to digest. And there's other nutritional benefits that come out of krill. Krill are high in an antioxidant called astaxanthin. They're high and something called choline, which helps with brain health. So there's a lot of other benefits that come with krill. But again, I only learned about it a little over a year ago. I recently had my omega-3 levels checked. There was an omega-3 index test.
Okay.
And my score was well above what the normal range should be. And I really associate that with being educated. I've done some actually work with a krill company. Because I wanted to learn more, and I really am, you know, kind of blown away with the results I have, because I can take less and get great results.
So what is the source of krill oil? Does it only come in supplement, or is it a plant or an animal, or what is the source?
Krill are really small, I'll call them critters. They're actually at the bottom of the food chain. They're actually like a crustacean. So they look like, if you look at them, they're like an itty bitty little shrimp. That's what they kind of look like. But they feed on an algae that's super high in omega-3s and astaxanthin. And it's probably the most sustainable form of omega-3 that we have in the supplement world. Actually, I'm going to go out and say it is the most sustainable.
Okay. Now, let me tell you this. My grandfather died. He was over 100 years, right? And he loved to drink wine. We knew him to be the wine guy. Everybody knew him, right? So every time you see him, you have to bring him a bottle of wine anyways. And we have that belief that wine was one of his secrets for good health, because he had very, very good health until he died. I mean, he had malaria and things like that, but nothing like. So what is this about red wine that everybody says is good for your heart, it's good for your blood? What do you say?
First of all, I want grandchildren like you were, because my grandchildren, when I have them, should bring grandpa a bottle of wine as well. I love red wine. And all right, so there is some benefit to drinking red wine. One glass a day, it's great. We know that's a heart healthy thing to do. But if you're really looking for the ultimate effects on heart health, there's a compound we've identified in red wine called resveratrol. It's an antioxidant, and it seems to be more heart healthy, cardiovascular healthy type of an antioxidant. We know in studies when they work on just resveratrol that it takes hundreds of milligrams to get the effect, whereas what the amount that's found in one little glass of red wine is very small in comparison. So you would have to drink probably cases of red wine to get the amount. Is it, again, it goes back to what I said earlier. There are heart healthy benefits to this food, red wine, but to get the ultimate benefit out of it, you're probably going to have to go to the supplement. And if you go to your local health food stores, even pharmacies now, you can find resveratrol. Don't ask me to spell it. I'm not getting my head on that one. Sorry.
Resveratrol. Okay. All right. So that's the thing about red wine. So tell us about the pillars of health. You talk about, your book says, four pillars of health.
Yes.
Heart disease. What are the four pillars of health?
I designed this about 2 decades ago, and I really believe in order for us to truly be healthy individuals, we have to do all four of these. They are diet, which is how we eat, exercise or activity, spirituality, and supplements. And I feel like we need to do all four of those equally well to truly either achieve the health we've been looking for or to keep the health that we have and the vitality. Because I've known pastors that could pray the paint off the wall, but they died of heart disease. Or I knew a gentleman who ran marathons, you know, as a world-class runner who died of cancer. You know, I've known dietitians that were really unhealthy. So, you know, there's people in all four categories that did one of them really well, and they all died because they didn't do the other ones yet.
So, okay.
And that's really, I think, how we all should think about life. Life is really about balance.
Yes.
It should never be anything in excess.
That's very interesting, and the spirituality component in that is part of the four pillars. Very, very interesting, but that's another show.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, we don't have much time left. What is the takeaway, if you were to give us something to take away?
Well, with regards to the heart disease, I truly believe that if you do the four pillars, diet, exercise, spirituality, and you haven't let your candle burn down too far. I mean, there's a point of no return. There's a point at which I can't really help people out. But if you really want to achieve health, it really is about balance. It's about taking the right supplements. It's about being spiritually connected. It's about getting enough activity. If you're going to eat like a cow, then you need to get the exercise of a cow. You know, you need to do more exercise.
Yes.
You know, and then you need to really make the right food choices. And whether it's heart disease or cancer or diabetes, you need to educate yourself. And that's why I'm blessed to be on here today. Hopefully somebody listening today picked up one thing they can utilize.
And
that's
quickly,
the goal.
Where can they find you? Your website, quickly.
Herbalpharmacist.com.
David Foreman, thank you so much for joining us. That was David Foreman. Our guest today is a pharmacist and an expert on, you know, we talked about it. So you heard his expertise. And we had Sarah Allen with the news, Jackson Vogani as a producer. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.